Okay. All right, good afternoon, everyone. It is 3 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. This is a work session on case number PU-20-344, the transmission rider case for MDU. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk remotely and Commissioner Randy Christman, along with Victor Shook from staff. And I don't know if we have anyone else, Victor, on the phone line from staff that might also be participating.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. All right. Well, then we can begin. I don't have any opening comments, Commissioner Fedorchuk.
I don't have any opening comments other than I had a meeting right before this and was not able to spend but just a minute or two looking at the filing from the companies and hoping that Victor will be able to walk through it all.
Yeah.
And kind of go through the various scenarios.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all for me.
No, I agree in that I believe, but that's how I'd like to start. Commissioner Christman, any opening comments?
No, sir.
Okay, Victor, can you start with walking us through the different scenarios?
Certainly. So before I get into the scenario, I did, you know, send out the order draft. Obviously, depending on what we choose, we'll change the numbers on there and maybe a few words, but it was largely just kind of the format and kind of some of the basic thoughts that I think we'd want to put on there if we were going to use an alternative method. And if we ultimately go back to the originalized proposed method, I would change this a little bit more, but just give you a little taste of where that's coming from. So just this morning, MDU made a supplemental filing per the request in the informal hearing last week. They have a number of scenarios that they walk through. I believe it's a total of seven different examples, and the examples are showing what the residential rate would be and the resulting monthly and annual increase to the residential class. The other classes would have similar impacts from this. So if we want to kind of just go through those scenarios, it's probably easiest to go to page 2 of their filing where they actually have the numbers, and then we'll kind of walk through the numbers and the explanation of what each of them are doing.
Do you have an extra copy of that?
I can make a couple real quick.
Would you Brian, please? Sorry.
No, I have it on my iPad.
I printed a copy before I left the office, so I do have it.
Okay, and Victor is, I think you can actually see Victor where he's sitting on the screen. He stepped out just for a minute. And he is back.
Thank you.
Okay. So page 2 of the filing, luckily the chart is at the very top there. So the first row is intended to show simply as the company's originally proposed rate, the resulting monthly increase and annual increase. So this contemplates issue or implementing the new rates as of November 1st. The scenario two, or sorry, scenario, the first one is as the proposed. Scenario one is the first alternative, and this would be passing or allowing the company to recover the under-recovery balance over a period of 24 months rather than the usual 12 months. This results in a slightly lower rate per kilowatt hour and an increase of $2.95 versus the originally proposed $3.35 increase on a monthly basis. So, what, 40 cents less per month than originally proposed. Scenario...
Victor, what would be the total cost?
The total revenue required...
Increased cost. No. Well, I mean, I guess I'm just trying to figure out when all what in total additional money will customers be paying.
Sure. So by passing that under recovery balance back over 2 years instead of one, we would essentially be taking approximately half of it, or $824,000. And the company gets a return on that, but it's not their standard return. It's the 3-month treasury rate, which is very low at present. So I'm trying to recall what that number is off the top of my head, but I think it's a percentage, 1% or less. But if we want to be conservative in our calculation, let's just say 2%.
I thought it was...
Okay, so that's the increase that the customers would be passed on to the customers. Basically, they pay 2% more to stretch it over?
Correct.
I thought it was less than 0.5%. I thought it was like 0.3, if I remember right. Next to nothing.
So exactly. I think it is the rate is next to nothing. But to some degree, we're counting on that staying next to nothing. It changes constantly. I can't imagine it changing drastically. But yeah, even at the conservative look at 2%, that's $16,000 for the entire revenue requirement. So you're adding an extra cost of $16,000 over a year.
Right.
Yeah.
And
at 2%.
So and at 0.5%, it would be 4,000-ish.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So a negligible amount.
Right. Right.
Relative to if you were, like when we were having our informal, we had talked about doing something similar potentially with some of these other, let's say the new projects, for example, where that would be a far larger increased cost over time, because that's earning the company's actual rate of return, which is more like 7% overall. So
can we back up just a little bit?
Yes.
And I probably should have framed this up earlier, because I know there's some folks on the line, and some people might be wondering, well, why are you approving it at all? Because obviously the conversation isn't whether or not we dispute recovery. And just to walk through that again, is there a single argument against what the legislature has provided for the company to recover these costs that exists?
I don't have a valid argument against any of the costs that they've proposed in this. If I did, I would be advocacy staff rather than advisory staff. Mm-hmm. As seen in other filings, I am the first one to go to advocacy staff if there is any kind of position to be taken. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to find one.
And this is a framework that for riders that was laid out in 2007 by the legislature at that time to grant recovery. It's a legal mechanism that the company is entitled to in terms of seeking and receiving recovery for the amounts that they have shown in this particular filing, this annual filing. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Not to interrupt, but I don't want individuals who may be listening to think that we didn't even, look at whether or not it was or wasn't an option, if you will, or optional in the sense and mm-hmm. in that sense. And I agree. I think the answer is clearly no. It's perfectly within the company's rights to seek this recovery.
They're certainly within their rights, and even further to that. So in addition to the questions we asked at the informal, there was data requests like I do for all of these rider cases to ensure and kind of stress test that these are legitimate costs. They're not made-up costs. They're appropriately being applied to North Dakota and other parts of their system as well. So.
And it goes back to reliability, whether it's 30 below in January or 100 degrees in July. Making sure the proper infrastructure is in place so people can actually get electricity delivered to their homes and businesses.
Yes.
Okay, sorry to interrupt, but I think that is an important element that for anyone listening that may have questioned the first part, and now we can get into where we're at and where you were. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Christman.
Don't be sorry, because this case drew some extra visibility through press coverage, and I think it was really valuable that you pointed that out for people who don't work with these things all the time. It's an important lesson and well explained by Victor that while we have authority to oversee these things and make sure that the things that they are requesting recovery for are accurate and within the law, we do not have authority to just ignore the law and deny them because we wish it were less. And so you make really good points.
Mr. Chairman, just want to let you know, Julie Fedorchuk had left the call, but I believe she's back. Julie, are you back now? Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I am back.
Okay.
Yes, but I did miss a good chunk of what Brian said, but I trust that it was largely framing for the public, and I don't know that you need to repeat it all for me. So.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, and just a reminder to use the mute function to reduce background noise.
I will do that.
Yeah. If your phone doesn't support a mute button, you can use *6 to toggle mute for GoToMeeting.
Okay. So I'll get back into it here. I think we had covered the as filed and scenario one, which was again a 2-year passback of the under recovery balance, which results in a net cost of likely no more than $16,000, more likely closer to $4,000 or $5,000 cost to customers. Scenario two is to entirely exclude the under recovery balance to next year. This drops the rate down even further, and the monthly increase is down to $2.55 for the average residential customer. And you can figure the cost of doing this in the long term to customers would be roughly double of what the scenario one provided. So the cost in and of itself isn't a huge dollar impact. However, it concerns me to pass along any under-recovery balance any longer than necessary. Passing it over 2 years is something we have done before on an extremely limited basis. While it's not my preference, it's something we've done, and it can work. Passing the entire balance to next year is kind of creating an additional risk to the future period that we don't have an even greater under-recovery balance at that time. And then instead of $1.6 million, we maybe have $3 or $4 million of under-recovery to deal with. That would be my thoughts and concerns on this. So although it may be a lower rate, the long-run risks are greater. Any questions on scenario two? Okay. Scenario three and four are both similar to one and two. They are simply delaying implementation from November 1st to December in the event that we aren't able to figure something out prior to our meeting tomorrow to approve this. So scenario three is the as filed, but delayed until December 1st. So this is not deferring any costs any longer than we normally would. We're simply saying we can't get this approved in time to implement November 1 rates, but rather December 1 rates that jumps up the residential kilowatt hour rate and the other kilowatt hour rates as well. The average residential increase goes up to $3.59 versus the original as filed $3.35. Scenario 4 is the passback of the under recovery balance over 2 years, but simply implemented on December 1st. So this is similar to scenario one, only a later start date. And this one results in, again, it's relative to scenario one, it's a little bit higher rate, and the monthly increase would be $3.07. And then we have scenarios five and six, which, again, are similar, only assuming we take even longer to make our decision, and end up with January 1 of 2021 implementation date. So scenario five is the as filed amounts being passed back over 1 year for the under recovery balance results in a much higher rate of $3.89 per month increase to the average residential. And scenario six is the passing back over 2 year period, the under recovery balance, which would increase, be a monthly increase of $3.22 to the average customer. Excuse me. And the company did also provide when their drop-dead dates are for each of those implementation periods. So in order to implement for November 1st, they must receive approval from us no later than October 29th. So it wouldn't necessarily have to be tomorrow. We could do a special meeting later on if need be. And then if we end up going into that much later date to implement on December 1st, they need an approval of no later than November 27th. That's all I have, Commissioner.
Okay. So going back to, you know, again, just to talk about the history of what has happened. 2016, there was not a change. 2017, the rider increased by 99 cents.
If I could provide a little bit of color on those. So,
well, I know 2016 was because of the rate case, if that's what you're going to mention.
Yes, so 2016, at the time, the normal time the riders were due, the company was about to file a rate case, and we agreed to allow them to keep rates in place until the conclusion of the rate case. That's something I think we have found in that situation in particular was not preferable. It resulted in a huge under-collection balance for all of their riders. So in 2017, that increase would have been after sweeping all of the resources. So the way it normally works, the transmission assets get added into the transmission rider in between rate cases. At the time of a rate case, all of those assets get sweeped into base rates, leaving only MISO and SPP costs remaining in the transmission rider. So at the conclusion of a rate case, the rider amount or the rider rate should go down almost always. At the conclusion of that rate case, after sweeping those assets into base rates, I believe it ended up in a net increase because of the under-recovery balance being as high as it was. So I just wanted to provide a little bit of color on...
So it was pretty significant that year. It was just kind of... It doesn't look that way because of the timing of the rate case.
Correct.
Okay. Which that I knew. And then, again, 2017, it went up to 99 cents, just picking up where I left off. 2018, it went down by 69 cents. 2019, it increased by 25 cents. And then, of course, in 2020, the proposal is $3.35. Well, I said it during the informal, and I'll restate my position because it's the same. I don't think the timing is good. Yes, there is a degree of uncertainty in terms of what next year, 2021's requirement will be. If we went to deferring the balance, the 1.6, is it 1.648 million?
Yes, that's correct.
1.648 million. Essentially, there's an 80 cent difference between the 335 and the 255.
Correct.
So, that's the risk level. To me, it's not an extraordinary risk, and for all we know, based on how this is bounced back and forth, it could be a decrease in 2021.
It certainly could.
I can't imagine it's going to spike again. You know, a big part of what's driving this is the under-recovered balance. I can't imagine that the company didn't spot the under-recovered balance and has taken steps in this filing to make sure it doesn't happen again. And they even indicated that they feel that the forecast model that they have, or the forecasting method they use this time, is they stand behind it. So I would, because of the timing, because of COVID, because of so many things right now, people that some are still out of work, some are working but not doing as well as they normally would. They may be a waiter or a waitress, and with restaurants being much quieter, they're not getting the tips they need for, there's just so many reasons. I would advocate deferring the $1.648 million, increasing, which would result in the $255. I shouldn't say. It lessens the impact to a degree. And I just think we have to be cognizant at this point in time. And it's not, I think one of the things mentioned was not, and I think we were talking more about the proposed transmission projects, stretching that playing field out, so to speak, and extending that beyond this year. But with the rate of return, the additional cost, and pushing that back a year, this isn't about moving it to the next generation for this piece, because it's a 12-month delay. And then I think it's safe to say that the vast majority of the ratepayers will still be the same ratepayers 12 months from now as they are today. There's just not going to be that much change. And this is never perfect anyway. In terms of people paying for projects, even 10 years from now, 15 years from now, they become a new customer, and they're paying for projects that are built today. And they didn't receive that benefit for 10 to 15 years, and vice versa. So that's where I'm at. I feel strongly about deferring the 1.6 given the current conditions. Commissioner Fedorchak, Commissioner Crispin, I don't know which one would like to go first.
I'll let Randy go first because I'm in a low spot. I don't know.
You're
right. Can hear me very well. So if Randy wants to go, that'd be great.
Okay. Well, I partially agree and partially disagree, Mr. Chairman. You're certainly right that this isn't like a big generational shift. It's a much shorter term than that, but it is a shift nonetheless. And I can imagine scenarios where we do end up with a good size hike next year. It might be in this rider. It might be in a different rider. It might be with a rate case. I don't know what it's going to be. Yes, it's bad timing for any increase right now for the ratepayers. The flip side to that is one thing about it, especially to the extent that a pretty vast number of the ratepayers either also get natural gas from MDU or they get propane from somewhere else. With all the bad things about this year, at least this year, those things are not spiking high in prices. And so that kind of balances out some of the hit. And I just have just philosophically felt uncomfortable about putting off bills till next year that are due today when it's not absolutely necessary. So I guess my original thought was to pay up for what is appropriate for recovery right now. doing the split thing for doing half of it, I guess I would find more acceptable as a kind of a COVID response, even though, like I say, philosophically, I just feel like you pay bills when they're due. But I guess going the second year causes me some discomfort, or going the full amount causes me some discomfort.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Yeah, I agree with Randy that philosophically it's better to pay the whole balance now. And I think I 100% agree with you, Brian, that this is unprecedented time, and a lot of people are really being impacted, especially hourly wage employees are really been impacted. I was looking at this and listened to the total increase in cost, et cetera. And I guess I was looking at the middle approach of scenario one, taking as an effort to reduce costs for people because of COVID, spreading the under-collected balance over 2 years rather than one and recovering it that way. So that would be a monthly increase of $295 versus $335. So that's where I was. I feel a little uncomfortable about there will probably be an increase in this rider down the road. It may not be in an under-collected, balance that has to be made up, but still layering that on top of something that's been sitting there for 2 years makes me, worried about what we could be facing then. And at some point, I feel like you're going to have to pay, and ratepayers are going to be forced with a sizable increase. So I'd rather stretch this balance over 2 years and get that paid off as quickly as we can, recognizing that conditions are hard right now.
And Mr. Chairman?
Mm-hmm.
So we've all talked about that part of the scenario, but we didn't really address 3 and 4 and then 5 and 6. So I guess I'm assuming that, I don't know that the decision changes any by waiting a month or 2 months. So I guess I'm assuming that we're all talking about doing it now and that we're talking about alternatives 1 and 2, not 3 through 6. But if we're on different pages, I think we should know that now.
I'm on that page, Randy. I don't like waiting.
One thing to keep in mind, yes, it creates a degree of uncertainty. But again, we don't. The bar is being moved up on a per month basis when you look at the rider. I can't imagine, and I could be wrong, but I just have a hard time imagining this is going to repeat itself in terms of this type of a scenario, because I didn't go back, go beyond 2016, so I don't know what happened in 2014, 2015, 2013 for that matter. I certainly could have dug a little deeper, but I just went back 5 years because you get to a point of things are moving around. Some of it prior to 2016, those amounts have rolled into rate base during the rate case of, 2016, 2017, correct?
Correct.
So you can go before that, but now it's in rate base. And things are going to go up with or without a pandemic. Did the company provide anything in terms of energy savings, in terms of being a part of MISO? In other words, when I'm a ratepayer and I look at these costs And it's not the complete story. Being a member of MISO, incurring RTO charges, also means that the energy that they purchase, utilize, use, and ultimately purchase, whether it's a home or business, is at a lower rate than if they, being MDU, was not a part of the RTO.
That's correct.
So there's a benefit, even though on the surface it looks like a rate hike, quota rate increase, but there's a good reason for it. But I don't think that's been portrayed accurately because, you know, essentially it's oftentimes the headline is it's a rate hike. Doesn't talk about what it means. You know, and people are left to digest this information based on what they see.
And I think Darcy Nigam tried to address that to a certain degree during the informal. I forget the exact numbers he had, and I'm honestly not sure if he even touched on the energy savings piece, but it would be significant, the amount of energy savings relative to purchasing cheaper energy from the market than MDU can otherwise generate it from their fleet of generators.
Yeah, he provided a conservative figure of $100 million in terms of a MISO exit, just in terms of commitments that they've made as a member of MISO. $6.5 million in year one, because I asked for the data. Jack issued a data request to say, okay, hypothetically, what if you did exit MISO? Because that was brought up in some of the comments and letters that we received, and it was being advocated, I believe, by AARP. But that would have a devastating effect on ratepayers, because that's just one component, not to mention the fees to exit, but I think that would be the lion's share of it, that $100 million. And then I believe SPP would actually be more to be a member of.
I think what MDU, what Darcy had portrayed, they would require MDU to have more generation than they do today due to the coincident peak factor that's used within MISO. So MDU only has to have capacity to meet its peak at the time that MISO is peaking, which MDU and MISO peak at different times. So their savings was, I believe he said, somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 to 100 megawatts. So that's essentially in Heskett 4. They would essentially have to come up with a unit similar size to that again in order to meet their capacity requirement within SPP versus MISO.
Right, right. So it's not a good scenario. I mean, I don't view that as an option whatsoever. It just doesn't make sense if 6.3 million is a hit to ratepayers right out of the chute. 6.5 million, not to mention new costs that could be just as much, if not more, more than doubles what the transmission rider would be overall. I'm not talking just the proposed increase. I'm talking overall. So that would be draconian in nature in terms of what the impact to ratepayers would be. It would be a significant financial hit. So that's just, to me, that's a non-starter. The one thing I keep going back to on all of this, today we're in the midst of a pandemic. And there are certainly people out there that are hurting. And I don't think anyone disagrees with that. I think we know it. The odds that things are as tough from an economic standpoint, I think ratepayers will better be able to absorb the additional cost, the 80 cents, whether it's balanced out with a 80 cents on the other side, or whether it's a 50 cent increase and then it's $1.30 or whatever the numbers land. Vaccines are being developed. They're going to be rolled out, I would say. I'm not, good grief, I'm not a medical expert. In fact, I'm not a medical anything. I'm a patient sometimes. But I just don't see where the country, the state or the country will be in the same spot that we are today. So even if there were additional costs plus the 80 cents next year, I think the general public will be far better able to absorb it at that point in time. So that's a point, an argument I would make to move on the 255 versus the 295.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to counter a couple of things a little bit here. And, you know, one is, and I don't know if it's totally understood since MDU is a member of MICE. So, I mean, I know it's understood in this room, but by a lot of the public. While they're a member of MISO, it doesn't mean that they're exempt from paying a lot of costs associated with SPP because these lines mix. And so actually a good part of the increase here is SPP-related in addition to MISO-related in addition to their own projects. And I know in the case of SPP, and I am pretty sure in the case of MISO, that there are more projects coming down for next year, and depending on what they are and how they're allocated, some of those costs could come to MDU for next year's rider case. I also will say this with, I think, more certainty than I have about vaccines for COVID. While I also am not a medical expert, I'll acknowledge that I'm also not a pollster, and oftentimes choose to ignore the polls, but to the extent that they're out there, most of them suggest that we're going to have a president starting in January who has sworn a very large tax increase on corporations like MDU. And when there was a sizable tax cut for MDU and the other utilities, this agency took quick action, went from day one and had that put back, restored, so that the company didn't get the benefit of the tax cut, but the ratepayers got the benefit. And so I expect that there will not be a good argument for why the tax increase, if it comes on corporations like MDU, will not be passed back to the ratepayers as well. And so next year, of course, it wouldn't be on this specific rider, but there could very well be a sizable rate increase to cover the costs of a corporate tax increase.
It likely actually would apply to the rider. If there were
this rider?
To all riders, yeah. Generally, other than the fuel clause rider.
It wouldn't be transmission related, but it would be a new additional expense passed on to ratepayers.
Correct. That actually, when we did the 2018 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act implementation, that's actually one thing that helped wipe out the large undercollected balance we had on this rider at that time.
Okay.
We used a big, I believe it was about $2.5 million piece that was a one-time item that would not have been appropriate to have in the base rates perpetually. We use that to reduce these under-collection balances and therefore reduce the rider rates as a result of it. So
putting too much of this off, and then if it happens to come in addition to a tax hike that gets passed on the ratepayers, could be pretty substantial for next year.
Chairman, it seems to me that we all agree that COVID is a problem we'd like to mitigate if we, you know, the impact. And we're talking about, you know, a $5 difference annually over extending it 2 years or 1 year. So I'd like to propose the compromise position of this, taking the balance, extending it over 2 years, and
and not putting it all off, but not charging everybody all of it now. I feel like we can all agree on that, and be kind of unified in how we approach this, but.
I would agree with that in light of the dilemma that COVID is causing for so many.
It just doesn't seem like that's really a substantial change to the ratepayer. It's almost like a token move versus something a little more meaningful.
It's a difference of $5 over what you're proposing over the year.
But that would mean the risk next year would only be an additional $5.
And whatever additional transmission charges might be included in the rider as well. So, I mean, it's not just a no-brainer that the ratepayers are going to be better off next time. I think that we can fairly surely look at what's happening in the world of transmission and see that there's going to be additional transmission bills and probably new projects that is these riders the customers are going to be paying for. And so I just feel like it's smarter to take the middle road rather than putting all of that undercovered balance on 2 years from now. So, I mean, I don't think it's a measurable difference between those two options. $5 a year is not that significant for rate payers on an annual basis. When you look at the total bill that they're paying.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, it's rates could vary, you know, transmission requirement could very well go up next year. But I think it's a question of, will people be better able to handle a higher utility bill next year compared to today? And I think the answer is yes, even if it is the additional $5 a month. I mean, there's a big difference when people are working versus not working, or making more on commission versus not making more in commission, or tips or whatever it might be. I don't think many businesses are going to be increasing hourly wages this year, just because they're.
But I want to make sure that it's $5 a year, not a month.
Well, I'd argue the same point. It's $5 a year to go to the $255. I was going to ask one other. These are six scenarios. This might just muddy the waters a little bit, but have we ever stair-stepped some of this in?
Stair-stepped such as, like, a increase it on a monthly, like, increase it so much this month and so much next month?
Say so much effective November 1st and then 6 months from now on April 1st.
We haven't done that on a rider in the past.
Have we done it on anything? Seems like we have.
We've done it on base rates based on settlements in a rate case back in the early teens, trying to think of what year that would have been. Probably 2010 through 2012. I think they did a stepped increase for NSP.
Well, one way or the other, I think something, the decision is going to have to be made no later than October 29th. Tomorrow is the 21st. I think I would have to think if I could support the 295 versus the 255. So we'd be looking at, in order to hit the deadline, in all likelihood, we'd be looking at a special meeting at some point next week. Is that correct, if my calendar is?
You could. If everyone feels like they know where they're at, I can have this ready for tomorrow's commission meeting as well. It's entirely up to you.
Well, I think the way it lays out now, I'd present a motion at 255 that in all likelihood wouldn't survive, and then it would be a second motion to replace it, and I'd prefer to all be on the same page, so I'd rather give it some thought tonight.
Okay.
I just don't think that's... if we're going to land where we're going to land, I'd like to avoid the extra step, if you will.
I will, just in preparation, I'll prepare orders for both of those scenarios, and they'll be ready for tomorrow morning if you decide to add it to the agenda. Excuse me.
Anything else, Commissioner Fedorchuk, from you?
No, I don't have anything else to add. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Christman?
I'll just say, as far as thinking ahead, like if you chose to put it off till next week, on Monday and Tuesday I'm scheduled for SPP. And I don't have my calendar with me, but I just can't remember beyond Tuesday if there's anything else, but I know those days would be problematic for a special meeting. That's all.
I would have challenges on Thursday and Friday because of OMAC's annual meeting, but I am available Wednesday. Okay. And Monday and Tuesday when Randy's not available.
Okay, fair enough. So if it didn't land on tomorrow's meeting, then we'd be targeting next Wednesday.
And I have to look whether I have anything. I just don't recall.
Okay. All right, then. Victor, anything else?
That's all I have. I will prepare those and wait commission direction as to when it will be on, if it will be on tomorrow.
Okay.
And if not, when we'll schedule a special meeting, I would assume, tomorrow after the meeting.
All right. Well, very good. Then I think that concludes the work session. Thank you, everyone.